creature was stirring. Not even a mouse.
In my mind.
So what they're saying that this judge is probably
thank you.
to all our family and friends. I want you to remember this line.
You're just gonna have to.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Warner Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Alrighty. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting out of the city of Chicago. It's a great city. It's a beautiful city, no matter what you hear. I'm broadcasting, in, obviously, in my studio near Lake Michigan, and it's fun. And I'm here to broadcast, folks. It's, the weather is beautiful today. We are not freezing our asses off here in the city of Chicago. It is like it should be, and this is the first day of winter. The first day of winter. Officially by the calendar, the first day of winter, and it is nice outside. We can wear a jacket, you know, and instead of being all bundled up and freezing and looking like a polar bear walking down the street, it is beautiful. It's great weather. You know, I got my shoes off and everything. I mean, I'm feeling good. It is great for the first day of winter. That's, isn't that weird? And for the last 2 or 3 weeks, we have been, I mean, not just Chicago, but most of the country has been freezing. I mean, Arctic cold, a cold blast, whatever they want to call it. You know, I mean, playing football in the freezing weather, these professional teams were. And for the first day of winter, at least in the city of Chicago that I know of so far, it's beautiful. I mean, it's seasonal weather. It's seasonal fall weather. Fall weather on the first day of winter. Winter weather, damn near every day of fall, 2016. So it's great. It's wonderful. And I want to say happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We're going to be another year older. Some of us don't want to see that year. A lot of us do want to get older because we just want to be older. But those who are older don't want to see another year. But, you know, it's inevitable. It's going to happen, folks. It's going to happen. So we have to just bear down and deal with it and do the best we can. All right, 2016 is coming to an end. And later on, we're going to have the best movies of the year. It's been a lot of movies. I think some of the best movies of the year, you know. So I like John Wick. You know, I like Keanu Reeves and John Wick. And there's going to be a John Wick 2. I can't wait. I like the first one. I'm an action guy. I like action, okay? I'm just so if you hear me touting some of the best movies of the year, it'd probably be more action-oriented, like, because I'm an action guy. I most of the stuff that I write and publish, some parts of it is action. I like love stories. I think love stories are great if they're done right and they're proper and they're greatly written and formatted. I think love stories can be overwhelming. I do like them, and I have written them, but not to the extent where I have written action. Sometimes I incorporate love stories, a love element of the stories into the action that I put down on paper. So we're going to be getting into some of the best movies of the year. We're going to be getting into those who have passed away. And we're going to try and look forward to a great 2017, I keep saying. I mean, it's going to be hard saying 2017 because we're so used to writing and saying and seeing 2016 all around the place. So if you're signing documents, you got to get used to saying, signing it, you know, and dating it 2016, 2017, okay? A lot of us going to be signing stuff and still putting the date 2016, and we're just gonna have to correct it. That's easy. And that's something that happens every year, that we have to learn to throw out the old and bring in the new, even the writing of the a year down on documents, dating it, you know what I'm saying? 2017 instead of 2016. So, all right. Once again, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Our greatest weakness lies in giving up. The most certain way to succeed is to always just try one more time. Never give up. Never give up. And even though we have Donald Trump as president of the United States, we might as well say he's president. It doesn't matter. You know, he's the president. The Electoral College has solidified, cemented his victory. So we just have to deal with it. Whatever comes, we just have to deal with it and pray for the best, you know. And 2016, see there? I'm still saying 2016. We got to get used to 2017. 2017, we're going to have a new president. So it's going to be a new era all the way around. No more President Obama. No, no more Michelle Obama. But I'm pretty sure that they're going to be out there. They're not going to go away, but they will not have the influence or be able to actually change anything through legislature. If we all work hard, we can all change things through legislation. I guess what I'm saying is that they will not be in the White House, basically. Because even though Michelle and her husband Obama, they will be out of the White House, but still they can always work for change. I mean, Obama can go back to being a community organizer, one of the best in the world. You know, he can still have influence on this thing, but not as much as he had when he was once in the White House. I think Obama blew a lot of opportunities to work for people who put him in office. I think he blew a lot of opportunities, or he just, you know, didn't want to do certain things. And that's another a topic, maybe like for later on. Anyways, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is Rocky Detwiler, and we will find out what he's about. I'm pretty sure he's an author, wrote a book or something. All right, we're going to find out what that's about. And I try to have people on the show that is going to make your life a little easier, my life a little easier, tell us something we don't know. And, we go on from there. Okay, author Rocky. First time I've ever had somebody on the show named Rocky. I've invented a character in one of these books I've written. Rocky, he's a bad guy, okay. But never had a person on the show, never even heard of an author called Rocky. It's an interesting name. It's an interesting name. I like it. I really do. So author Rocky Detwiler would be on the show today. Hopefully, maybe. Who knows? Anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Black Talk Radio. Follow me right here, 347-857-1762. As you know, a lot of us, it's Christmas, and Christmas will be here in a few days. And you know that your kids, if you have children, I mean, you know, school age children, you know that they're probably out for the winter break, or they soon will be out for the winter break. And you got to find something for your kids to do, right? And because you don't want them just laying around the house, watching TV, playing video games, eating up everything in the house. You don't want that, and you don't want them bringing in your house, in their room, you know, strangers. I mean, you know, screwing up the house. So you have to figure out what are you going to do with your kids? What are you going to do with them to try to keep them busy until this break is over, the winter break is over. We're going to try and talk about a little bit of that later on into the show. And we are going to do this right quick because it's going to be fun, folks. And thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for podcasting. Thanks for all your, I get a lot of accolades for the show as a radio host and as the show itself. And I want to thank everybody for doing that. It's hard work, folks. It is totally hard work. And I do most of it myself. I do most of it because
I don't need to pay someone else to do something that I can do. And I've talked about this the other night on the show. If you can do something yourself, if you can do it for yourself, do it. Do not pay people to do things that you can do. You know, and that's my model, and that's how I do it. You know, I don't pay anybody. That money I keep. I can put it in the bank, or I can buy something stupid with it. You know, I don't have to give it to someone to do something. And in some cases, you may hire somebody to do something for you, and they would do a worse job than you would have done. So I'm not saying if you can't do it and you need someone else to do it, or you physically, or you know, something physically is wrong and you can't do it, then hey, wow, go get someone else to do it. But I'm just saying, if you can do it, and if you're sure you can do it, and if you just put your foot forward that you can do it, save that money by doing these things yourself. You know, because that's one of the things of the George Wilder Jr. Show, is to making the world a better place, is get to you to do things for yourself and stop relying on other people, because you cannot really rely on other people. You have to rely on yourself. You want something done, you get it done. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to listen to this right quick.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
We do a lot of stories on family, and we know families with loved ones in a nursing home often wonder, are they really okay? And it's a nightmare if we believe that they're being mistreated. We have a horrific example of what can go wrong. Her colleague Jane Velez Mitchell brought this story tonight, to light, that is, last night on Issues. Let's get you the story. Tragic story. 78-year-old Lois McAllister is her name. She has Alzheimer's disease. Lois was allegedly being harassed by workers at the nursing home. But before a camera was put in the room and the video was available, the family thought, really, everything was okay.
Mary, when did your mother first tell you that workers were abusing her, and what exactly did she say to you?
It was in early March. She kept saying that she was being hurt. Her arms were being pulled and twisted. She was being punched. So I went to an administrator and told them what my mother had told me, and she got back to me and told me that it was due to a change in her mental status.
So in other words, they were suggesting her dementia had gotten worse. The family couldn't trust mom here. Well, the family didn't take any chances, put a camera in the room. Here's what they saw. Now, it's dark video, tough to see what's happening here. And this video given to us, by the way, by Haverford Township Police Department. Lois's daughter, son-in-law, they allege this is mom being taunted, mocked, sometime when she wasn't even fully clothed. Now, Lois's daughter and son-in-law, they saw this video. Obviously, they were furious, but just heartbroken.
I don't know what joy you can derive from harming an elderly person, especially one who's depending on you to take care of them. You know, we trusted them to take good care of her, and they didn't do it.
What a great point. Who does that? Who has the heart or lack thereof to do that? Now, three workers have been charged here with aggravated assault, criminal conspiracy, neglect of a dependent person, harassment, and reckless endangerment. They've lost their jobs, from what we understand. We do have a statement, or part of the statement, from the company that runs the nursing home, Sunrise Senior Living. Here's part of it saying, we cherish each and every resident we serve and take these allegations very seriously. We've cooperated closely with law enforcement. They go on to say the three individuals involved in this incident have been dismissed from their jobs. And despite the unacceptable actions of a few, please remember that the Quadrangle is filled with many great and compassionate caregivers and are dedicated to delivering superior.
All right, we'll get back to that, but we're trying to get together the best movies of 2016. All right, here we go. Captain America, Civil War. I've got that. I've seen it. I think it's pretty good. But, you know, just because these people here are saying that these particular movies in front of me are the best movies of the year doesn't mean that I think that they are the best movies of the year. Okay, I may not. I've seen Captain America, Civil War. I've seen just about all the Marvel movies. And I don't think it's one of the best ones. I think the best Marvel movies is probably the first Avenger movie, the first Iron Man movie. I think I do like the first Thor movie. So, and all the remakes and sequels to these movies are, in my opinion, were not, you know, up to par. So I've seen the Marvel movies, and I think that Captain America Civil War, it's not a bad movie. I did enjoy it. It is entertaining, but I don't think it matches is up to par with the Avengers, the first Avengers. And I don't think the first Captain America, I think, is pretty good. I think the first Captain America is great. I think there's been about four or five Captain American movies made with Chris Evans, and I'm more partial to the first one. Okay, that's my opinion, but I mean, the internet says that Captain American Civil War is one of the best. You may think it is, but you know, everybody has a different opinion. And they're not. And the next movie is Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I cannot really comment on that because I haven't seen it yet. And it hasn't actually opened in Chicago yet. Maybe I believe this Friday it'll open. But I haven't seen it yet. But reactions to it and the buzz over it, I'm thinking that it's a good movie. And I have seen the trailer. And I'm thinking that it's a good movie. And I want to say it is, but I can't really put my finger on it because, like I say, I don't want to say much about it if I haven't seen it. I'm just telling you what these people are saying, advertising as the best movies of 2016. Okay, Zupola. I haven't seen that one. L.A. La La Land. Okay, I'm saying L.A., but it's La La Land. They're saying that that's one of the best movies of the year. It has garnered some Oscar attention with Ryan Gosling. I can say this. I'm not a fan of Ryan Gosling. That's just me. You might be. I don't know. And the other one is Deadpool, 2016 Deadpool. I haven't seen that. Ryan is another Ryan. I can't think of his name, but he's in there. And The Nice Guys with another Ryan movie, Ryan Gosling and Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. I haven't seen that one. They said that's one of the best. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm just telling you what they're saying here. Clover Lane, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Let's see if we can hit this. Okay, everybody wants some. Okay, everybody wants some. What does that mean? That's a movie. That's the title of a movie. Everybody wants some. I mean, you can interpret that a million different ways, right? Everybody wants some. I haven't seen it. It sounds like a sexual romp or something. Moonlight. I've heard some talk about Moonlight. All of these are 2016 movies. They're supposed to be the best of 2016, okay? Next one is Manchester by the Sea with Casey Affleck, Ben Affleck's younger brother. Okay, they're saying that this one is leading the pack for getting an Oscar. If you haven't noticed something, all of these movies that are supposed to be the best movies of the year, the majority of them, if any of them, barely makes any money at the box office. They do nothing at the box office. I mean, they might make $1,000. They might open, let me put it this way, they might open up the box office, you know, on the first day, $1,000. But just that a little bit amount of money, but they may get all kind of accolades, Oscar buzz, and awards and all this kind of thing, and they barely make any cash. You take something like the Avengers, which got nothing, made $1 billion. I mean, over so many billions of dollars, you know, and some of these Oscar nominated movies, they make nothing. You barely hear about them. And they failed at the box office, but, you know, they get all kinds of Oscar buzz, you know. Yeah, it behooves me. I guess it doesn't. I don't know what they're saying is that, you know, a movie doesn't have to make a lot of money to be Oscar worthy, because most movies make billions and billions and billions of dollars worldwide and get no Oscar buzz at all. But these little movies that make no money, I mean, you know, the directors, the movies, the stars are walking across the stage accepting an Oscar. That's the same thing. That's what I feel about Manchester by the Sea. It made no money. Everybody wants some, made no money. But yet these movies are in Oscar contention. All right, 347-857-1762. It's a movie here called Wiener. I never heard of it, so I'm going to pass it. Okay, Hail Caesar. These are movies that I'm touting that they say are the best of 2016, because 2016 is just about over and just about everybody is talking about the movies. Okay, Arrival with Amy Adams. Okay, I've seen her in a few movies. She was in Superman. She was in she was in Superman, and she was in a movie called Hustle. With the word hustle in it or something. You know, she likes to take her clothes off in the movie. So, and she's a movie star. I mean, she's starting to actually headline a movie, you know, starring Amy Adams. She's not in the background anymore. That's how you know, she pulled herself up, and she became the her name is the first one on the credits, you know. And that's congratulations to her. I've seen her in a lot of movies. I think the best thing that Amy Addison has done is probably I can't think of it, man. That's what happens when you get old. You can't think. And then they got this one, Hell and High Water. Now, the only thing I like about Hell and High Water, I haven't seen it, but I do know that Ben Foster is one of the greatest actors out there. And I don't think he's getting his due. Because ever since I saw this guy in the latest 310 to Yuma, a Western, I said, this guy should be up on that Oscar stage. You know, he's a good actor, but I don't think he's actually finding the right parts that's going to get him there. You know, I think if he play something like he played in 2007 when he was doing the Western 310 to Yuma, a character called Charlie Prince. That was just awesome. That was just awesome. And he won an award for that. And that was it. And he should play something similar to that in the future. Okay, they're saying Hell and High Water. I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment on it, whether it's good or bad. But I'm just saying, folks, these are the movies of 2016, you know. So let's see. There's something called Sing. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it. Jungle Book. I would love to see Jungle Book. I haven't seen Jungle Book yet, the latest one. I think I've seen the one from the 1940s. It was old and, you know, on television. But the latest version, I'm pretty sure, is pretty good. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I've been touting the best movies of 2016 because it's going away. We're going to later on, we're going to talk about the people we lost in 2016. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back after this kid's, after this kid laughs. All right, we are back. Let's go to the phones. Okay. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
George, this is Rocky Detweiler from Boise, Idaho.
Hey, Rocky Detweiler from Boise, Idaho. Thank you for doing the show. Thanks for being on the show. And thanks to you for, you know, just participating. All right, tell us about yourself. Give us a little bio and what you do and why we should listen. Go right ahead.
Yeah, my name's Rocky Detweiler, and I have a life transformational story where I lost everything as a victim of one of Arizona's largest Ponzi schemes. I ended up living homeless for a couple of years, actually lived in a treehouse for a year and in a foreclosed home as a squatter for a year, and ended up in a really deep, dark, depressed place in life where I thought life wasn't worth living. So in my mind, I thought that it was time to give up, and contemplated, how do I end the pain? How do I end life? And therein lies the story, that something deep inside, an anchor held. I thank God he was there, would be alive today sharing the story with you, George. And
all right,
that put me, that was the crossroads in my life. And at that point, I decided to live. I decided not to give up, and that I would never give up, and that my life did have meaning. It did have purpose. That was 6 years ago. I was homeless. I was alone. I was fat, suicidal. Today, I live in a beautiful home, married to the most amazing wife God could give a man. And my story's inspired hundreds of millions of people around the world. I built a couple of companies that I focus on the power of life transformation through words. So I'm a life transformational expert, and I focus on the power of words. So that's what I've done, and it's been pretty extraordinary. And I always look forward to sharing my story and how I can empower other people, how I can share a message of hope with them to never give up, to not give up when you know the cards are stacked against you, when you've been knocked down or you've been knocked out. It's time for you to get back up, and you have to dig deep and go, is my life worth it? And therein lies my story. And so it was worth it. And now that mess has become a message to inspire millions of people to not give up, George.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think anybody should give up. I say the same thing. Our greatest weakness lies in giving up. The most certain way to succeed is to always try one more time.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the old adage, right? You get knocked down, but you get back up. If you fall off the horse,
yeah,
you get back
exactly.
on the horse. And it's, that's mm-hmm. the message of life. I think that is because, listen, we're always going to come up against failures. In fact, if you're not failing, you're not succeeding. So, I mean,
I totally agree.
It's one of the most constant things in life is change. And so, you know, it's resilience that carries you through. And I think we're dealing with a society now like we've never dealt with before. We're dealing with kids that, you know, they get stressed out if they have too much homework. And when I was growing up, I had chores.
Yeah.
I had disciplines. I had it. You know what I'm saying? It's a different
yeah.
society today. And so we're looking at these different things, how we can help people, you know, overcome adversity, because that's part of living. Part of living is going through the challenges, is going through the, you know, it's having difficulties in your life and how you deal with them. That's where character is formed and shaped and molded.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you 100% because I do think adversity, I think you learn from it. I think failure, you learn from it. It's not a curse. You learn from it. You learn not to do it again. You learn to get up. And a lot of people do need motivation. They need to be motivated. A lot of people tend to give up, they can't make it. They give up. And you know what? A lot of these people have other people around them that are telling them that what they can't do, they shouldn't do, they're not allowed to do. And a lot of people listen to other people telling them that they're not worth it. And they just, you know, just sink into themselves and just give up because of other negative voices around them. Well,
Yeah, and George, those voices are everywhere, right? I mean, the media shouts it on all four corners of the world. I mean, they're propagating things that sometimes are just virtually impossible to live that amazing life that you would think that you want, and Hollywood projects that. Listen, some of that just is not real. And when you enter the real world, you figure out that, hey, it comes with some bruises and it comes with being knocked down. But that doesn't mean you get knocked out. It just means you become smarter. Right?
Yeah,
you don't give
exactly.
Up and you find a way.
Exactly.
Yeah, you find a way around it. And I think that's what you're saying is being motivated, right? Yeah, being motivated, having that internal motivation. And I think that comes from having a North Star. It comes from having a purpose, like, and knowing what your why is. I mean, hey, listen, I was working with a very, very wealthy individual, okay, that manages thousands of people and is an incredible individual. But he was struggling with his why on his fitness. And so it was interesting because I asked him one question. He asked me a question. Why am I struggling? Why am I up and down? Why am I roller coaster? I said, because that part of your life isn't important enough to you. When that becomes important enough to you as money in the bank or as coaching other people, then that will change. And so I became his coach, and he's turning his life around in that area. He needed accountability. He was missing that part in his life. And so it's interesting, right? You want to take your life to the next level, but who's coaching you?
Mm-hmm.
Who's training? Who's mentoring you? Look to the grace of the world, right? Look to the greatest athletes on the planet Earth. They don't get there by themselves. They get there because they have someone looking at and analyzing, going, okay, what if you twisted this way a little bit? What if you put your foot here? What if you know what I'm saying? And so that should be us in life. Who's coaching you to the next level in life?
Do you think it's important that for people to, one of the aspects of being motivated is to have people around you who support you?
Absolutely, I do. I mean, listen, to Walt. I just watched the Walt Disney movie, okay? One of the greatest stories out there. I mean, he created, fantasy on planet Earth.
Yeah,
He did have people around him that believed in him and supported him. And watch his character. Watch his character all the way through.
There were people around him who tried to do him in too. There were people around him who didn't like or agree with some of the things he was doing, but there were most of the people did.
That's right. What I was going to say is, if you watch his character, said was he was still nice to those guys even at the end of his days. He didn't shut them off, and I think that's really important. Listen, when it's all said and done, and they strip everything away from you, and they take your home and your land and your cars and your money and all the things that you think are important, and all you have left, George, is your character. That's all you have left. That's going to stand for something. That's what's really important is, you're going to make the right decision at a tough time. And I think that's where adversity comes in, right? Taking the easy road out or maybe saying a quick little gray lie here to get through it. It always comes back, and that's why character is so vitally important. And, listen, I lied to myself all the time, man. I was making myself promises. I just like, hey, no, man, I'm going to get ripped next year. Next year would come around and I'd still overweight. Or, what I'm saying? It's important to keep those promises if we can. And,
right.
It's interesting, George. I had people say, Rocky, how did you do this? And so we created an apparel line that was all inspirational. But there was something that happened during this time where I said, I want to reach more people. I want to help more people because of what I did. And I want to create a program. And so Cheryl and I, my wife, ended up writing a book called The Samson Effect. And if you think a lot about this, this is chronological order of how it happens. The effect is this, is that your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. And your habits becomes your lifestyle, how you live out your life. That's a chronological order of how things happen. And it's pretty incredible, right? Some of the greatest philosophers of time have said that very same thing, right? That your thoughts are the genesis. That's the centerpiece of everything, right? Because your podcast, you do radio, you know, you're out there inspiring, encouraging people, but it began with a thought somewhere that got you to where you are today. Hey, you know what? I think I might start a show. And so you spoke it. And now here we are talking. So the action's taking place. That's how it's happened.
Yeah.
That was me, man. I was down in the press. So important. Good. Something to take away.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in what you can do. You have to get rid of the negative voices around you, because there's going to be a lot of them going to try and tell you what you can't do. But Rocky, when you were homeless, you were determined to get back on your feet. You were more determined than ever.
Yeah. And it was, again, this was a process too. It just doesn't happen overnight. You know,
I know.
With me. Yeah, I was homeless, and there what happened, and I think this could happen in anybody's life once they make a decision to change, and that's the important part. It's like, how do you, and if you were to say, so what do I need to do? Well, you first of all have to make a decision. You have two guys standing in front of you, and they both are, let's just say they're overweight, okay? So they need to lose 30 pounds of body fat. They both know they need to lose 30 pounds of body fat.
Mm-hmm.
And one goes, you know what? I really do. I'm going to make a decision to change. The other guy, he knows he needs to do it too. However, his thought process is different, George. His is like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know I need to lose it, but I'm kind of comfortable just being fat. I'm okay with it. Maybe he doesn't think he's fat. Maybe he's just overweight. Doesn't even matter. But you know what I'm saying? He didn't make a decision
to
change.
Yeah, I know.
That's where the important part was for me. I knew I needed to make a decision to change. And when I did that, I started that emotional ball rolling in my life, and I started speaking differently. And when I started doing that, things started to change, positively change in my life, because it's like a river. Your thoughts are like a river. They're flowing in a specific direction. Now, in order to change the direction of the river, you have to start changing what you're thinking about, because they're your thoughts.
Yeah.
And it happens by one thought at a time, George. Listen, the river doesn't change overnight, right? It changes a little bit at a time. And before you know it, you have this amazing, positively thought-provoking, feelings and emotions going in a very positive direction, which creates a brand new river. That's what happened with me. That's what could happen with anybody once they make that decision to change. And so I went from homelessness to happiness, and you know, I went from the treehouse to triumph, and it's been a story that circled the globe. And I like, man, I'm just so grateful I could even share a story, as I didn't think it was a big story. Yeah,
that's something that you can share, what you've gone through, share your experiences, because you know so many other people out there are going through some of the things that you have gone through, and you're out there trying to motivate them to say, keep on trying, keep on doing it, you will make it. And I totally agree with you. Rocky, you've written about this, right? You have this, you've written about this. It's in a book form, right?
Man, George, I wrote about it. I've coached about it. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere. I want my message to be loud and clear. I was in New York 6 weeks ago, you know, talking to some of the biggest producers in the world. I mean, the people that produce CNN, CNBC, 48 Hours, Good Morning America, Today Show. You know, I was talking to all of them and pitching them stories about, you know, overcoming and adversity and that sort of thing. But I want my message to get out there, because listen, I know what it feels like to be at the bottom and have nothing and lost it all and be homeless.
I do too, man. I'm with you. I do too.
Yeah. So you ask the question. Hey, I've got a book called The Samson Effect. Go on Amazon, go get it. It's going to be the best book you probably ever read. It's going to change your life. And then leave a great review. I mean, pay it forward.
Yeah.
Buy a couple.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I bought Jeff Olson's book, and I bought 60 of them and gave them away. Now I have my own book I can give away. And then we have a blog. If you're listening to this, I want you to go to RockyDetweiler.com and go get a free it's called 5 Steps to Fit and Healthy. It's yours for free. I want you to have it. So if you're out there and you're struggling and you're like I was, you don't have to be at the same level, but you're just like, you know, Rocky, man, I want some tips. seriously, go to Rocky, R-O-C-K-Y, Detweiler, Detweiler.com.
Yeah,
get it. It's free. I want you to have it. It's an ebook. I'm giving it away.
Yeah, if it's an ebook, you can download it onto your Kindle, you know, or any reading device, your phone, whatever, device that you have, you can download your laptop computer. So there's no reason for anybody out there not to get this book, especially if you know someone that's being motivated, or if you need to be motivated, or you need to be, or you're having a hard time, this book will help you.
Yeah, the Samson Effect, you will pay for. That's on Amazon. The Five Steps to Fit and Healthy, that's an ebook. That's free. That's at RockyDetweiler.com. You can Google me. You can search me. I'm so easy to find. I mean, I want to make it easy for people to find where I'm at so they can follow. I mean, I have how to be happy, how to journal, right? I have all kinds of YouTube. So people that are looking and they're struggling and they don't know what to do and they're at the bottom of the rope, there's free content out there and that we put together that will help people overcome. And that stuff's all free, George. All of it's free.
Yeah, all free. The show is just about over. I want people to know, do you have a website that people can go to and contact you?
Yeah, they can go again to Rocky Detweiler. R-O-C-K-Y, Detweiler, Detweiler, Detweiler.com. They can go to the Samson, Samson, effect.com.
Okay.
They can go to Samson.life. So I'm easy to find. Please go there. And email me if you need some help or just need to talk. It's not a problem. That's why I come on the show, so I can let people know that they don't have to be alone, George.
Okay, Rocky, once the show is over, I'm going to send you a link to the show, and you can put this link up on your website, your blog, or whatever, and people can come by and listen to you on this show because you're so passionate about what you're trying to do. You really want to help people. They can listen to you on this show, on your website, or wherever you want to put the link. How does that sound?
Sounds awesome, man. I love it, George. Hey, you're in Chicago, right?
Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, I was out in Chicago in June. And it was a dream of Cheryl and I to get out to Chicago. And it was a dream of mine. One day I want to be on the Steve Harvey show, George. That's my goal. I want to be on Steve Harvey telling my, you know, my Rocky story. I do. I don't know why, I just do. So I want to share that.
I've
never shared that openly before. You're the first guy I shared that with.
It's awesome, man. But Chicago now is very, very cold. So if you're somewhere warmer, it was freezing, man. But, it's a little bit better now. But a few days ago, it was cold as hell. All right, Rocky, thanks for being on the show, man. And I will send you that link as soon as possible.
Hey, George, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Bye-bye. All right, Rocky Detweiler on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell.
Denver, why are you
I was 22.
You been on that
I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card.
Let me see.
And I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why That Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know, that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe, he bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview. I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask. Because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser. Because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying. As if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me, because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend, right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
All right. Okay, we're going to be talking about this segment. We're going to talk about the people that we've lost in 2016, those who have given so much but have passed away, died. Some of these people were great people, people you know of, people I know of. Pat Harrington, this guy was on a program. He was on a sitcom, okay? David Bowie. Alan Rickman, Dan Haggerty, Glenn Frey of the Eagles. I used to listen to the Eagles all the time, and Glenn Frey, his voice was out there. He's gone. Abe Vigoda, Fish, George Gaines. Okay, most of these people are in the movies or sitcoms or famous people of some sort. Tony Burton. If you don't know who Tony Burton was, he was one of the characters in the Rocky franchise, the Rocky movies with Sylvester Stallone. Okay, if I can say it. Okay, Kennedy. He passed away. Nancy Reagan. Okay, Robert Horton. Joe Santos. Joe Garagiola. Ken Howard. From the White Shadow, Peter Brown, Gary Shinlin, James Noble, Patty Duke, Doris Roberts, from Everybody Loves Raymond, Prince, William Shatner, not the Star Trek, it's another one. All right, Maurice Safer from 60 Minutes, Alan Young. From a sitcom, Talking Horse, Mr. Ed, Muhammad Ali passed away, Anton Yelchin, Noel Neal, the first woman, the first Lois Lane in the Superman series that starred George Reeves, Gary Marshall, the director, Stephen Hill, wow, Gene Wilder, Hugh O'Brien, Arnold Palmer, Robert Vaughn, one of the guys from the original Magnificent Seven back in 1960. Now they're all dead, okay? He was the only one alive for a moment there, but now they're all dead. Florence Henderson of the Brady Bunch, she passed away. Fidel Castro, Ron Glass of Fish, of Barney Miller, he passed away. Van Williams of the show with Bruce Lee, what was it, 1966? He passed away, obviously, and just recently passed away. John Glenn, he was 95 years old. 95. Alan Thicke. Yeah, I was just listening to this guy doing a commercial. He's passed away. Bernard Fox from Bewitched. And now, the most recent person that passed away instead of after John Glenn was actually Zsa Zsa Gabor. Now, of the famous Gabor sisters, all three are now dead. So those are some of the people who passed away in 2016 who are no longer with us. But you know what? These are famous people. But what about all the people who have died and passed away in 2016. We don't even know who they are. We don't know their names, you know, but they're gone too. So for all the people out there who have passed away that we do not know their names, we don't know who they are, but we know that they're gone, they're past, God bless those people who we don't know who are not in this list of being passed away in 2016. Millions of people die every day all over the world. You know, but these people get notoriety because they are on the screen. They've done something famous. They've done something. They have some sort of notoriety. This is the only reason why we do this. But I want to mention this. Gene Wilder passed away. I was very, very distraught at that because he was one of my favorite actors. I love him in Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, and some of the movies that he himself directed beside Mel Brooks. And another thing I want to say about Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder and I share the same last name. My name is George Wilder. He's Gene Wilder. And I think I've talked about this before. People used to come up to me and say, Gene Wilder is your brother or is some kind of kin to you? I said, no. You know, I think they were being sarcastic because if they were being real, you know, I mean, I'm African-American. He's white, but I realize anything could happen. But that's one of the fun moments that I've had being a Wilder, being some people associating me with Gene Wilder, okay? this was years ago, so, you know. But I was so surprised that back then, I was so surprised that people knew who Gene Wilder was. I knew I did because I used to watch a lot of these Mel Brooks movies, and he was right there, center. And I remember watching Bonnie and Clyde with, Bonnie and Clyde. He had a small part in the 1967 Bonnie and Clyde movie, which was directed by and produced by I'll think of it later. But anyway, people used to try to connect me with Gene Wilder. It was good. I never met Gene Wilder. I don't know Gene Wilder. I never knew him, but I knew of his work. And maybe he knew of my work, of what I'm doing. Who knows? I don't know. But anyway, these are a bunch of people who passed away. Hugh O'Brien, he used to play. He's known for playing Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp. Of course, he was that was a real Wyatt Earp, and he was nowhere near that. But this was just Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. He would play Wyatt Earp, you know. And Wyatt Earp was, if you think about it, Wyatt Earp, the real Wyatt Earp and this fictional Wyatt Earp, they were far apart. You know, I mean, they were far apart. Stuff like that. Robert Vaughn of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the A Magnificent Seven, the original one. There is a new Magnificent Seven out starring Denzel Washington, but we're talking about the original from 1960 with all the other stars like Charles Bronson, a bunch of people, Robert Vaughn, Charles Yul Brynner, all of these people are gone. So Florence Henderson, I was heartbroken when I heard that she passed away. That was really a heartbreaker. John Glenn, Alan Thicke, I was surprised at that because I kept hearing his commercials on the radio and seeing him on television recently, and then discovered that he passed away from a heart attack. He was playing hockey with one of his kids or grandkids. You don't get out there and you don't get out there and play hockey unless you're fit to do it. And apparently he wasn't. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That's it for the people who have passed away in 2016. And we did have a list of the best movies of 2016. They may not have been my pick for best movie in some cases, but, you know, that's what Hollywood is saying, that they're the best. But, you know, everybody has their own opinion about what's best and what's bad and what's good. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guest. He was really, really animated. Rocky Detweiler on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Make sure you pick up his book. Go to Amazon, The Samson Effect. I'm going to check it out, too, you know, because I do like what he was talking about. And I hope you do too. This is what this show is about. It is all about making the world a better place, one show at a time. And we're going to keep doing that as long as we are on the air. We are about motivating you, getting you to be the best that you can be. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of shows out there who are doing the same thing, but there is something different about the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I hope you pick up this book and adhere to what we were talking about, me and Rocky, early on in the show, And it's all about you. It's not about us. It's about you. Rocky was homeless. He somehow picked himself up out of the gutter and made himself successful. He became successful. That should be good enough for anybody. All right, we're going to be right back. We're going to do a musical break.
Do blacks commit more crimes than other races? The simple answer to this question is yes. The black population...
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot. For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth. The much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing. Just since last Friday, Donald Trump has given aid and comfort to our Russian enemies who are aiming for nothing short of world prominence with the help of their jackass Trump. He has undermined this nation's status as the only enforcer left on the side of human rights. And he has screwed up, whether inadvertently or as reported Sunday night deliberately, nearly four decades of diplomacy balanced on a razor's edge with China and Taiwan. And just as that China and Taiwan diplomacy began to stabilize, he went and screwed it up again on Twitter. Good work, moron. You don't have to live next door to the United Nations to understand why talking to the president of Taiwan and making it public and referring to the close economic, political, and security ties between Taiwan and the United States just increased the chances that Trump will get some of us, including his supporters, killed. Since 1979, we have played a silly little childish game with mainland China. If we don't make a big deal about that island of Taiwan, if we don't call it a nation, if we recognize that psychologically Taiwan is to the Chinese what communist Cuba has been to us since 1959, if our diplomats and presidents and dipshits elect like Donald Trump don't rub China's nose in it, the Chinese will not wipe the more or less democracy of Taiwan off the freaking map. It's that simple. The 1,350,000,000 mainland Chinese communists will not turn the 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan into a parking lot. All we have to do is not do exactly what Donald Nitwit Trump did by saying what he did to the Taiwanese president last Friday. But of course, he did it because he thinks he knows better than everybody else about the world when he doesn't know shit. Anyway, what's the fate of 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan compared to what really matters? The president of Taiwan called me today to wish me congratulations on winning the presidency. Thank you. Interesting how the U.S. sells Taiwan billions of dollars of military equipment, but I should not accept a congratulatory call. Because clearly the point of an incoming presidential administration is to see how many leaders around the world call in to tell him how terrific he is. We now see, 6 weeks out from the inauguration, the outlines of the Trump doctrine. Congratulate Trump! Sunday, a crowded elevator's worth of trumpets pushed a story in the Washington Post that this was all planned. It was a more robust defense of Taiwan, which is, of course, even dumber, especially if the idiot-elect has to publicly disguise his planned robustness as naivete, because, of course, he then gets mad when people call him naive, and so thus he doubles down on the whole thing Sunday night on Twitter. So now not only are the Chinese pissed off, not only is their help in whatever looms next for us in North Korea in jeopardy, and not only is an actual slow growth in the reliability of the relationship between our two countries at risk, but who benefits from uncertainty between the U.S. and China? We don't win from it. The Chinese don't win from it. In whose interest is the new confusion, the new setback, the new ass-hattery from Trump? Russia. Always Russia. Russia. And by the way, guess what flooded out of a WikiLeaks dump Saturday that you probably didn't hear about? 90 gigabytes, 2,420 documents of intelligence related to Germany and the German President Angela Merkel, ahead of Germany's upcoming elections. Germany, which since Trump's election by a minority of our voters has already taken our place as the leading democracy in the world and the only Western power able or willing to stand up against the passive-aggressive world war that Russia has been waging for several years, now with the aid and comfort of President-elect Donald bumbling amateur Putin puppet fucking Trump. And yes, I said Trump's election has already resulted in Germany taking our place as the leading democracy, the leading enforcer on the side of human rights in the world. And if these fiascos with China and Taiwan and WikiLeaks in Germany are not evidence enough, there was a third Trump diplomatic disaster that might actually have eclipsed the other two. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, the street thug who has had thousands of his citizens murdered by police and vigilantes without trial, or in many cases without...
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right, folks, that was Keith Olbermann, one of my favorite talk show hosts. It's clearly that he doesn't like Donald Trump, and it's not that hard to decipher. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off the air, folks. I want to thank my guest, author and motivational speaker. I'm going to call him that because that's what he sounds like to me. Rocky Detweiler. Make sure you go pick up his book, The Samson Effect. It's a motivation trying to get people to be better, make themselves better. Don't let adverse situations get you down, pick yourself up off the ground and be the best person you can be. That's what this show is all about. That's what this show will continue to be about, because you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off the air, folks. I'm going to say thank you very much for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And thank you very much for participating in the show itself also. So we will be back tomorrow. It's Thursday. Take care. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year and all that good stuff. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl.
Thank you and goodbye, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the show.
Now lay me down before I go to sleep. In a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.